Following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Sing
None
it.
Of that soft stuff. Rock, rock. None of that heavy metal stuff. Rock, 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 just a little bit of jazz. Rock, rock, rock,
what do you think?
Just I
like
love
that.
It. That was great.
That's the
Thank
way you.
You
start a show. All right. Welcome to a Thursday, everybody. And I'm going to tell you right off the bat, we don't have Howie Klein today. I contacted him early this morning. I said, it appears that today's hearing at the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol, this is going to be a pretty consequential day. And because it is in the middle of the day, a lot of people have to work and they don't get to see it. And so I need to cover it. So either you can join me to recount what happened, or we can just skip this week. And he said, I'm not going to be able to watch it in real time. So let's just skip this week and we'll regroup next week. So today it's just you and me. And a lot of video. It was an interesting day. We knew there were going to be fireworks. And the thing is, they built up their main witness today to be a bombshell. And if you listen to what he said, if you read his statement, it was. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Brad Friedman because I'm going to be filling in for him tomorrow. And we're talking about what I should do on that show. And I suggested I run yesterday's interview with John Nichols, because if you didn't hear it, it was a good one. And it wasn't your run-of-the-mill, this happened, that happened. It was more a philosophical discussion of where are we and how do we move forward from here. Anyway, the problem is Brad just had John Nichols on his show last week. Although I promise you they're two completely different interviews. Anyway, so what he was saying is, I'm thinking, if Michael Luttig, this star witness, reads this introductory statement, that might be worth airing in its entirety. Well, two things. One, Michael Luttig did not read his statement. And two, thank goodness. Because as important a man as he is, and as big a witness as he is, his delivery was kind of deadly. And I don't know what somebody said. He's a stroke survivor. Could be. Or could be he's just, you know, he realizes the consequences of this day and he's parsing each word very carefully. But wow, listening to him speak was kind of torturous. But let me tell you who he is. He is a judge, or a retired judge. Judge J. Michael Luttig is a widely respected and very conservative former federal judge who was nominated to the Federal Court of Appeals in 1991 by Papa Doc Bush, H.W. Bush. At the time of his appointment, he was only 37 years old. He was the youngest judge on a federal appeals court. On the bench, Judge Luttig was compared to Justice Antonin Scalia, and he was mentioned frequently as being near the top of W's list of potential Supreme Court nominees. And virtually all of his law clerks have gone on to clerk with conservative Supreme Court justices. A total of 40. He had a 40 of them. 33 of them clerked for either Justice Clarence Thomas or Scalia. Give you an idea of where this man is. Judge Luttig is a very conservative, longtime federal court judge who was even turned to for advice by then Vice President Mike Pence on January 6th. Now, we'd all heard that he turned to Dan Quayle, that brilliant legal mind. Oh, wait. Remember Dan Quayle? He's the guy who couldn't spell potato or broccoli, I think. It's foggy from that, but, you know, like that. Anyway, apparently, Pence tried everything. You know, despite the accolades hoisted upon him today, and there were some, remember, Mike Pence called everyone trying to get someone to tell him, yeah, go ahead and do what the president wants you to do. But nobody would. So the testimony of Michael Luttigan, I'm going to play some of it, was pained, but he did not read his statement. I will link to the entire 12-page statement that he only gave to the committee moments before the testimony began. In fact, at the end, he even said, or was it at the beginning? Maybe it was at the beginning. And now I can't find the... No, I don't know what I did with the first page. And that's a good thing. Okay. So anyway, I'm going to share with you a few excerpts of it because I can. Here, this is, okay, this was the first page. He said, with my respect to the Select Committee, I did not submit the statement prior to my testimony today pursuant to the rules of the U.S. House of Representatives, so to avoid any appearance or suggestion that my testimony is that of an interested political party partisan or is on behalf of the Select Committee or any person involved with, on, or after January 6th, or is that of a witness in any other way, quote, interested in these hearings. I testify today only as a private citizen and as a nonpartisan, disinterested, independent former federal judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals who happens to have been a fact witness to the events surrounding January 6th. The views, the thoughts, and the words herein are mine and mine alone, submitted to the Select Committee on my own behalf and no one else's. And basically, he said, this could have been the end of it all. So I'm going to read just a little bit of his statement. And again, I'm paring down 12 pages worth, but I want to share with you. It's very well written. It's very to the point and it's compelling, unlike his physical testimony. Sort of reminds me of Mueller, right? When he finally took the stand, he's like, that's the guy we've been hanging our expectations on? Well, same kind of thing. So let me share with you a few of Judge Michael Luttig's words. He wrote, a stake was driven through the heart of American democracy on January 6, 2021, and our democracy today is on a knife's edge. America was at war on that fateful day, but not against a foreign power. She was at war against herself. We Americans were at war with each other, over our democracy. January 6th was but the next foreseeable battle in a war that had been raging in America for years, though that day was the most consequential battle of that war even to date. In fact, January 6th was a separate war unto itself, a war for America's democracy, a war irresponsibly instigated and prosecuted by the former president, his political party allies, and his supporters. Both wars are raging to this day. A peaceful end to those wars is desperately needed. The war for our democracy could lead to the peaceful end to the war for America's cultural heart and soul. But if a peaceful end to the war for America's democracy is not achievable, there is little chance for a peaceful end to the war. The settlement of this war over our democracy is necessary to the settlement of any war that will ever come to America, whether from her shores or to her shores. Though disinclined for the moment, as a political matter of fact, only the party that instigated this war over our democracy can bring an end to that war. Like our war from a distant time, these twin wars are, quote, testing whether this nation or any nation so conceived in liberty can long endure. We must hope that January 6th was the final battle of at least the deadly war for America's democracy. Then he continues. I'm skipping ahead now to page 4. The nation wept. I skipped over the whole events of the day because we know what happened and we're going to hear more about it in a moment. But then he goes to the end of the day. The nation wept during the evening of January 6th as the Capitol Police began to clear and resecure the Capitol at day's end. Finally, at 8 p.m. on January 6th, 7 hours after the siege on the Capitol had begun, Vice President Pence gaveled the joint session back into order with measured, understated resolve. Quote, today was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. Let's get back to work. Well, the judge continues, January 6th was a dark day in the history of the United States, too. It was not until the next day, January 7th, 2021, at 3:42 a.m. in the morning. That's redundant, sir. Just tell it. A.m. in the morning. not miss. Anyway, almost 15 hours after the joint session had first been gaveled into session by Speaker Pelosi, that the vice president finally declared that Joe Biden had been elected the 46th president of the United States. On January 6, 2021, the prescribed day for choosing the American president, there was not to be a peaceful transfer of power for the first time in the history of our republic. Skipping ahead again. Again, I want you to read the whole thing. I'm just sharing a few excerpts. Had the vice president of the United States obeyed the president of the United States, America would immediately have been plunged into what could have been tantamount to a revolution within a paralyzing constitutional crisis. I want to make sure you heard those words. This is from the most conservative of judges. He was a Bush pick for the Supreme Court. He was a clerk for Scalia. And then his clerks went on to also clerk for those same justices. They don't get any more right wing than this guy. And he's saying, look how close we came to the end of our republic, Democratic Republic. He continued, the former president's accountability under the law for the riot on the United States Capitol on January 6th is incidental to his responsibility and accountability for his attempt to steal the 2020 presidential election from the American people and thereby steal America's democracy from America herself. This said, willful ignorance of the law and fact is neither excuse nor defense in law. Willful ignorance, thus, is neither political nor legal excuse or defense available to the former president of the United States, his allies, and his supporters. On January 6, 2021, revolutionaries, not patriots, assaulted America and American democracy. The walls of all three of our institutions of democracy were scaled and breached on that appalling day. And almost 2 years thence, one of America's two political parties cannot even agree whether that day was good or bad, right or wrong. Worse, it cannot agree over whether January 6th was needed or not. Needed or not. Pause for a moment, he writes, and reflect on that. The former president and his party cannot decide whether the revolt at the United States Capitol to disrupt and prevent the constitutional counting of the votes for the presidency was needed, and therefore whether another revolt might be needed at a future date to accomplish that which the previous revolt failed to accomplish. If one of our national political parties, one of the two political guardians of our democracy, cannot even agree as to whether the violent riot and occupation of the United States Capitol, inspired by the President of the United States and carried out by his followers to prevent Congress from counting the votes for the presidency of those same United States, was reprehensible insurrection or needed legitimate political discourse, we can all agree on nothing, nor should we. The former president's party cynically and embarrassingly rationalizes January 6th as having been something between hallowed, legitimate public discourse and a visitor's tour of the Capitol that got out of hand. January 6th, of course, was neither. And the former president and his party know that. It was not legitimate public discourse by any definition, nor was it a civics tour of the Capitol building, though that day proved to be an eye-opening civics lesson for all Americans. January 6th was, rather, a defining and a redefining day in American history, defining and redefining of America itself. On that day, America finally came face to face with a raging war that it had been waging against itself for years. So bone-chilling was that day for our democracy that America could not believe her eyes, and she turned them away in both fear and shame. Even so, many have already forgotten, and many more have chosen to forget. Some who rioted and occupied the Capitol that day had already decided how this war for our democracy must end, while others of their compatriots, upon sober reflection afterward, decided that no, this war must end now before there is further bloodshed. As did we. Those latter saw how this war ends, and they realized that no one should want for such end. For their part, the former president and many of his party remain to this day undecided as to which end of this war they will commit themselves. Undecided, that is, as to which end of the war they want to commit themselves. To be undecided today is as to whether to end this war over a democracy is to have decided how one wants this war to end. Thus, for the rest of us Americans, the time has come for us to decide whether we allow this war over our democracy to be prosecuted to its catastrophic end, or whether we ourselves demand the immediate suspension of this war and insist on peace instead. Here's where he's getting a little lofty in his ideals. We must make this decision because our political leaders are unwilling and unable, even as they recklessly prosecute this war in our name. We Americans begin to make this consequential decision this week when Congress, rightly, if painfully, takes us back to that day in January we want so much to forget but mustn't, and reminds us of what was at stake that day and still in what is this most unholy of wars. I'm only in the middle of page 7. This goes on for 12 pages. It'll take me the whole show probably to read the whole thing. Therefore, I will post the entire thing on the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/today's date, which is 6-16-22. That's always the format, how I post each show on my website, NicoleSandler.com, so you can find it. And no, there's no paywall. Now, we do take donations, but it's voluntary. But your donations keep me going, so, you know. Take it for what it's worth. Anyway, I urge you to read the whole thing because it's powerful. This guy is one of the most revered judges on the right. And for him to say these things, you know that it pained him. And all you had to do was see his face today. He was in pain. He was not happy being there, but he knew that he had to be. Unfortunately, his delivery wasn't quite so animated, so it's a good thing they didn't have him read this thing. But you need to read it. Okay, so, I see we've got the sex bots in the chat room today, keeping Joy busy, because she's the only moderator in the chat room right now. Oi, tell me if I need to deputize somebody else to help you, because I don't know what these bots are thinking. They think someone's going to click on their naked HD stuff. Oh, Environmental Coffee House is here. Yay. So Sandy can help. Okay. So anyway, what I've done is, thanks to some great tweeters who were watching along with us, because I was watching intently, I was recording the whole thing. But thanks to people like Aaron Rupar and Jen Taub and some others who pull video clips as the thing is going, I've got video to share with you today. So we're going to go through it, as much of it as we can, for the rest of the hour. If you have a burning comment to make, you want to weigh in, phone lines open, 954-889-6410. Oh, Ludic did have a stroke. Okay, so that's why he was so slow in speech. But that's okay. I'm not here to criticize his delivery. I'm here to thank him for testifying. All right. So, as has been the case, Liz Cheney sort of presented what they were going to cover in this, the third day of testimony in front of the House Select Committee investigating January 6th.
When exactly did President Trump know that it would be illegal for Mike Pence to refuse to count electoral votes? Here is one sample of testimony given by one of the witnesses before us today, the Vice President's General Counsel.
Did John Eastman ever admit, as far as you know, in front of the President, that his proposal would violate the Electoral Count Act? I believe he did on the 4th.
So this is Greg Jacob. Who was there in person today, too?
2 days before the attack on Congress.
Okay, that was January 4th, 2 days before the attack on Congress. All right, if you call in, just know that I don't have a producer. I take the calls live on the air. So if I punch you in and you hear it on the phone, it means I'm going to come to you. So 562 area code, I'm coming to you in a moment. Just turn down your radio and listen through the phone, okay? Hi, who's this? Hello?
This is Mario from California.
Hey, Mario.
Hello.
How are you?
You there?
Can you not hear me? Hey, Mario.
I'm doing...
There you are. Hi.
I can hear you now.
Cool.
Yeah, there you are. Anyway, great. Well, yeah, you hit the nail on the head today with his comments, but I think that as much as he was pained, he was a patriot today.
Yep.
He told the truth.
He did.
And I think, at the end of the day... that's what we're all here to hear. We just want the frickin' truth.
To quote John Lennon, give me some truth, right? And the thing is, he even talks about the lies and the lies upon lies, right?
Right, yeah. Yep. And even the gentleman sitting next to him, you know, Pence's attorney.
Jacobs,
you know,
right?
As much as it pained him, he told the truth.
He did too. Yep. No, today was an interesting day.
Anyway,
like the first 2 days, a lot of people from Trump's orbit, from the Republican Party, were testifying. So it's, you know, when you hear it coming from them, sorry, you got to listen to them. All right, Mario, it's good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Hi, 434 area code. Who's this? Hello?
Hi, this is Linwood. Good afternoon.
Hey, Linwood, what's up?
Well, you know, talk about this January 6th committee. You know, I've kind of been on a little sour on the two major parties because this is just a clear waste of time. The people that did this garbage, basically, this should show you how far white people will go to maintain the bootstepping on the backs
my God.
Of non-white
All right.
people.
Bye, Linwood.
Exactly,
bye, Linwood.
Exactly.
That's the most asinine fucking comment I've heard today. I got to make a note that that's Linwood's number and remember that. This has nothing to do with white people or black people. A lot does, but this doesn't. And you know what, Linwood? Fuck off. That's just asinine. All right. Wow. Okay, so back to... wow. See, this is what happens when you take calls unscreened. You never know what you're going to get. I will mark that as Linwood's number, so I know. I do know some people who I'm calling, and I can see their number. Anyway, back to it. So... I don't have my cue sheet here. All right, so next up in this, you know what? I'm sorry. I got to say, this really pisses me off. This was not worthless. This stuff needed to be outed in a way that the entire world can hear, can see what happened. And laying it out like this in these hearings is the only way to get that across. And hopefully Fox is airing it now. You heard what the former guy said. I want equal time. Yeah, Trump wants equal time. Fine. Come on in. Take the oath. Be sworn in. And you can answer questions for, well, as long as we'll listen to you. You can have equal time. You got to go under oath. Like your daughter did. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, anyway. Back to this. So, to show... How Donald Trump incited the crowd. Here's a clip of him at the Ellipse at that rally.
He's going to have to come through for us. And if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country.
Wow.
And Mike Pence, I hope you're going to stand up for the good of our Constitution and for the good of our country. And if you're not, I'm going to be very disappointed in
God.
You. I will tell you right now.
Like he's talking
I'm
to his kids.
What,
now
I'm
listen to the people.
I hear the Pence just caved.
No.
Is that true?
I didn't
I'm hearing reports that Pence caved.
No.
I'm telling you, if Pence caved, we're going to drag motherfuckers through the streets. You fucking politicians are going to get fucking drugged through the streets.
Wow.
Yes.
I guess the hope is that there's such a show of force here that Pence will... decide to do the right thing, according to Trump.
Do you believe this?
Bring him out!
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 Hang Mike Pence.
Bring him out! Bring him out! Bring him out!
Yeah, and there's the noose.
How did we get there?
So that is the committee showing a video of Trump turning the mob against Mike Pence on January 6th. And then you hear the Trump fans, his sycophants, saying things like, if Pence caved, we're going to drag motherfuckers through the streets. Okay. Yeah. Patriots? I think not. So the two witnesses that were there in the room in person were first, the lawyer whose statement I read partially for you, Judge Luttig. The other was Jacobs, who was Mike Pence's White House counsel for a good amount of time there. And they both talked in the first part of the hearing. The second part was mostly Jacobs, because I think they realized that Luttig was, difficult to listen to. Anyway, here is Jacob, former Pence counsel, saying,
this theory.
Well, you'll hear what he said.
What did you conclude?
So we concluded that what you have is a sentence in the Constitution that is inartfully drafted. But the vice president's first instinct when he heard this theory was that there was no way that our framers, who abhorred concentrated power, who had broken away from the tyranny of George III, would ever have put one person, particularly not a person who had a direct interest in the outcome because they were on the ticket for the election, in a role to have decisive impact on the outcome of the election. And our review of text, history, and frankly just common sense all confirmed the vice president's first instinct on that point. There is no justifiable basis to conclude that the vice president has that kind of authority.
There is no justifiable basis to conclude that the vice president had that kind of authority. Think about it. That's the vice president's former lawyer saying this. So that everybody knew it. It's like the emperor has no clothes. Because they all knew it. And we've heard that time and time again, to the point where we know that Trump knew it himself, because they all told him that. Even Eastman, the guy pushing this scheme on Trump, even Eastman knew it. Right, Liz?
And just a few days after that, Dr. Eastman wrote another memo. This one, quote, wargaming out several scenarios. He knew the outcome he wanted, and he saw a way to go forward if he simply pretended that fake electors were real. You will see that memo up on the screen now. Here, Dr. Eastman says the vice president can reject the Biden electors from the states that he calls, quote, disputed. Under several of the scenarios, the vice president could ultimately just declare Donald Trump the winner, regardless of the vote totals that had already been certified by the states. However, this was false, and Dr. Eastman knew it was false. In other words, it was a lie.
That's what false means.
On December 19th, 2020, just 4 days before Dr. Eastman sent this memo, Dr. Eastman himself admitted in an email that the fake electors had no legal weight, referring to the fake electors as, quote, dead on arrival in
Congress.
Dead
on arrival.
End quote. Because they did not have a certification from their states.
Dead on arrival in Congress because they didn't have a certification in the states. All right, back to the phones. 417 area code. Who's this?
This is Tamara, Nicole.
Hey, Tamara.
Hey, listen. Merrick Garland just announced that the DOJ's confirmed it's targeting the same people the January 6th committee is targeting.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, there was another notable news item today, and that is the DOJ sent a letter to the committee saying, you're talking to all these people that are part of our investigation, too, and you are hampering our investigation by not turning over complete transcripts. So they demanded getting those transcripts immediately, and I think they should.
I agree.
Yeah.
At least the ones that they've the hearings they've already held.
Sure. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Don't show your hand on the people of the hearings you haven't held yet.
Right.
But give them everything that you've done so far.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because again, there's a finite amount of time. Now, the House investigation has a shorter amount of time than the Department of Justice does, because ostensibly DOJ has 2 more years, where the House committee, if they lose the majority in November, it's over. That committee is shut down. So they've got to get this done. But they've done some amazing work here, and they need to get that stuff over to justice. I fully agree.
Yep. But I'm excited that Garland's alive.
Yes. No, and look, I trust Marcy Wheeler. And she's been saying all along, he's doing the work. He's very thorough. Let him do his work.
He takes his time. He dots his I's and crosses his T's.
Right. And wouldn't you rather that all the ducks be in order than have it thrown out on a technicality because they rush to judgment?
That's what I've been saying to everybody for months.
Mm-hmm.
I said he's building his case from the bottom up.
Yep.
He's taking all the little people at the bottom and talking to them, and he's building a pyramid.
Yep.
And Donald Trump is the point.
Yep. All right, Tamara, let me get going because I got lots more clips to air. All right, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. All right. Okay, so moving right along, there was another White House attorney who wasn't there in person, but as you know, they go to the videotape for these depositions that they've been running for months now. In this case, it was a White House lawyer named Eric Hirschman. And maybe someone can tell me, is he in the bathroom? Because it really appears that he's speaking from the bathroom with there's a shower control right behind him. Here, look at this before you even start the video. You see what I'm talking about? And then there's some kind of panda drawing. This is the weirdest. I would love to see how Room Raider rates him. Anyway, here's what Eric Hirschman had to say in response to John Eastman's theory that Mike Pence could decide the election. He's got a colorful language.
What were your prior interactions with Eastman?
He described for me what he thought the ambiguity was in the statute, and he was walking through it at that time. And I said to him, hold on a second, I want to understand what you're saying. You're saying that you believe the vice president, acting as president of the Senate, can be the sole decision maker as to, under your theory, who becomes the next president of the United States? And he said, yes. And I said, are you out of your effing mind? Right? And I...
He liked to throw the F word around a lot.
I said, you're completely crazy.
You're
going to turn around and tell 78 plus million people in this country that your theory is this is how you're going to invalidate their votes because you think election was stolen? And I said, they're not going to tolerate that. So you're going to cause riots in the streets.
You're going to cause riots in the streets.
And he said, words to the effect of, there's been violence in the history of our country, Eric, to protect the democracy or protect the republic.
Okay. So did we decide? I think he's in the bathroom. But you know, I digress. It's not really important. All right. Another caller, 540 area code. Who's this?
Yeah, man. What up, man? This is Pete from up north, man. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth, man. I like this, the committee hearing. You know, it was real, you know, positive. We got a lot of insight of what's going on. But, you know, to be honest with you, you know, this committee ain't going to last long because the Republicans are guaranteed to take the House.
Well, they're not. Hold on. The Republicans are not guaranteed to do anything. And that's the kind of attitude that will get them to take control of the House.
So,
we can come out in force and not give them control of any branch of government. That's up to us.
We should not allow it. You're correct about that. But, you know, the political naysayers and the political, you know, the Steve Kornackis of the world, you know, I listen to what they say.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit more like, I'm skeptical about it because, you know, Biden ain't really been on his job as of late because, and it's not just him, it's really the lack of government. And, you know, I'm hearing out here in the streets, you know, like that caller that said something about the white people,
saying
the backs are non-whites, you know. I'm hearing that same sentiment, you know, I'm hearing that all the time. And so sometimes, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe people like that is right, because I keep hearing that all the time. Like, if this was the Black Lives Matter or some other non-white organization, they would have been shot and slaughtered.
Yes, you know, they would have been.
But then it goes back again to that statement of boots on the back of necks of non-whites. Is this really what it's about? Because, you know, how do you do that to your own government?
You know what? I got to ask you something, Pete. We've got institutional racism in this country. That's not a question. And I don't debate that. I'm with you. But this January 6th was not about that. It was about Trump's megalomania, his desire to be a dictator. He wants to be the next Vladimir Putin. He doesn't like that Putin has more power than this. This is one thing that is not about race in this country. So why does everything have to go to race? I get you that much of it is about race, but when it isn't,
because the two political parties, that's how they're one of them. They're the ones that have mainly been pushing it with a wink, wink, nod, nod.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm not going to go down that road, because right now we're dealing with facts. And look, I'll talk race relations with you any day of the week. Thank God we've got an actual new federal holiday on Monday for Juneteenth, where parts of this nation are trying to come to terms with our past. But when you do that, you can't put the label of racism on every problem we have. I believe it overshadows much of this country, and many of our problems are as a result of racism. And I know that most of Donald Trump's followers are racists, but I don't think that's what's at the heart of this issue. And I'm not going to make that the focus of this program today. I'm sorry, Pete.
I understand. I got you.
Thanks for calling.
No problem. Anytime.
Okay. All right. We'll talk another day. I'm just not going to turn this into a discussion about race. We can discuss race till we're all blue. That might fix some of our problems. Not really. I'm being facetious. But, like, come on. This is about this push towards fascism, this push towards authoritarianism, this push towards dictatorship, which is what Donald Trump wants, and for some reason his followers want to. Obviously, Heil Donald, you've seen them do that. Stop it. All right. So anyway, you know, I'm going to jump ahead in a couple of minutes, but this next clip that I've queued up, I'll show you anyway. Mark Short was not there today, but he was present with testimony from the depositions, and even he told the committee that he believed that Mark Meadows even agreed that Pence didn't have that power. This is the emperor's new clothes. No one was willing to tell him.
Had you been clear repeatedly with Mr. Meadows about you and the vice president having a different view about his authority on January 6th?
I believe I had.
Did Mr. Meadows ever explicitly or tacitly agree with you or say, yeah, that makes sense, or okay?
I believe that that Mark did agree.
What makes you say that?
I believe that's what he told me. But as I mentioned, I think Mark had told so many people so many different things that it was not something that that I would necessarily accept as, okay, well, that means that's resolved.
I see. Tell me more what he told you on this topic.
Well, I think it was that, you know, the vice president doesn't have any broader role. And I think he was understanding that.
So despite the fact that he may have said other things to the president or others, to you, he said he understands the vice president has no role.
Yes.
Okay. Did he say that to you several times?
A couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Before January 6th?
Yes.
Well, it was communicated.
So Mark Meadows, this is Mark Short, who was Pence's chief of staff, and he's telling him that Mark Meadows, who was Trump's chief of staff, told him there was no there. Everybody knew, and they even told Donald Trump they knew, but Donald Trump kept on his crusade that he wanted Mike Pence to do the right thing. It wasn't the right thing, but they showed this video package that shows how Trump and his minions pressured Pence to break the law, to break the Constitution, to break the country.
Here are some examples of the intense pressure the vice president faced from all sides and what his chief of staff thought of it.
I hope Mike Pence comes through for us, I have to tell you. I hope that our great vice president comes through for us. He's a great guy.
Right.
Of course, if he doesn't come through, I won't like him quite as much.
Was it your impression that the vice president had directly conveyed his position on these issues to the president, not just to the world through a dear colleague letter, but directly to President Trump?
Many times.
And had been consistent in conveying his position to the president?
Very consistent.
I am aware of the fact that the president was upset with the way Pence acted.
Are we to assume that this is going to be a climactic battle?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on the courage and the spine of the individuals involved.
That'd be a nice way to say a guy named Vice President Mike Pence?
Yes.
I think we've been clear as to what the vice president's role was. I think the vice president made clear with the president. I think I've been clear with Mark Meadows.
I think the vice president is going to throw down tomorrow and do the right thing because, Lou, like I said before, this is
God.
A time for choosing. People are going to look back at this moment tomorrow and remember where every single one of their elected officials were.
Yeah,
they
are.
Did they vote for the rule of law and getting these elections right, or did they give it away to the Democrats and the people
That's
who
Jason
cheated
Miller.
And stole their way through this election?
Now I know why. There he is with his mask on. Same guy.
The fifth and the sixth. The president was, you know, all the attention was on what Mike would do or what Mike wouldn't do.
The vice president really was not wavering.
This is Mark Short again.
Commitment to what his responsibility was. And so, yeah, was it painful? Sure.
Yeah. Jason Miller, what a scuzzball he is. What a piece of crap. He goes on TV. He's like, Mike Pence needs to do the right thing and it's his rule of law. And then he comes on with his mask in the deposition and he's like, oh, we all knew he was lying. We all knew it wasn't real. Talk about no integrity. Talk about ick. Or like, right? Ick. That's ugh. Everything about him is ick. Well, everything about
something like that.
Well, I got to share this one with you too. Ivanka made an appearance today, and Daddy's not real happy with Vanky.
Either with something like that, yeah. You're not tough enough to make the call.
It was a different tone than I'd
there
heard him
is.
Take with the vice president before.
Did Ms. Trump share with you any more details about what had happened? Or any details about what had happened in the Oval Office that morning?
That her dad had just had an upsetting conversation with the vice president.
Okay,
do you
recall anything hold on.
About her demeanor, either during the meeting or when you encountered her in Dan Scavino's office?
I don't remember specifically.
This is the lawyer again, White House counsel.
Uncomfortable over the fact that there was obviously that type of interaction between the two of them.
Something to the effect, this is, the wording's wrong. I made the wrong decision 4 or 5 years ago.
And the word that she relayed to you that the president called the vice president, I apologize for being impolite, but do you remember what she said her father called him?
The P word.
Well, we know he likes the P word. The P word. Ivanka told her chief of staff. That woman was Ivanka's chief of staff. We paid for Ivanka to have a chief of staff. Oh, my God. But Ivanka told the chief of staff that Daddy called Mike Pence a pussy. Yeah. Well, you know, is anyone surprised? He likes grabbing him by the pussy. That's the guy. Boy, we go full circle. Go full circle. So remember on the ellipse when Trump started calling out Mike Pence, and we showed the video earlier of how the people in the crowd reacted and said, hang Mike Pence, after Trump called him out. Well, in this clip, you're going to hear from Mr. Jacob, the former White House attorney, that Mike Pence wasn't even in the first draft of Dump's speech.
Jacob, how would you describe
the demeanor of the vice president following the call, following that call with the president?
When he came back into the room, I'd say that he was steely, determined, grim.
Of course, the most dangerous part of what Donald Trump did on January 6th was what he did himself.
Yeah.
As will be discussed in detail in a future hearing, our investigation found that early drafts of the January 6th ellipse speech prepared for the president included no mention of the vice president. But the president revised it to include criticism of the vice president and then further ad-libbed. Here is what the president said on January 6th after
his call. It wasn't in the original draft. Wow.
I hope Mike is going to do the right thing. I hope so.
Oh, fuck you.
I hope so. Because if Mike Pence does the right thing, we win the election. All Vice President Pence has to do is send it back to the states to recertify. And we become president, and you are the happiest.
Oh, favorite. God. Ugh, he just makes my stomach turn.
And I just spoke to Mike. I said, Mike, that doesn't take courage. What takes courage is to do nothing. That takes courage.
What?
And then we're stuck with a president who lost the election by a lot.
Yeah,
and
you.
We have to live with
this,
that for
this,
four
oh
more
my
years.
God. Oh,
we're
my
just
God.
Not let that happen. And Mike Pence is going to have to come through
wow.
for us. And if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country. And they want to recertify their votes. They want to recertify. But the only way that can happen is if Mike Pence agrees to send it back. So I hope Mike has the courage to do what he has to do. And I hope he doesn't listen to the rhinos and the stupid people that he's listening to.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
It is. It's Opposite World. You listen to the way the man just lies with every breath he takes. So then they showed a video, the impact of Trump's criticism of Pence. So what he did was he put out another tweet. Oh, yeah, because back then Trump was still allowed to tweet. I think this was his last day tweeting. Here's what he said.
In his 2:24 p.m. tweet, while the violence at the Capitol was going on. And here is what the rioters thought.
Nothing but a traitor, and he deserves to burn with the rest of them.
So this all escalated after Pence. What happened to Pence? Pence didn't do what we wanted.
Pence voted against Trump.
Okay, and that's when all this started?
Yep. That's when we marched on the Capitol. We've been shot at.
Pence voted against Trump?
Tear gas.
We just heard that Mike Pence is not going to reject any fraudulent electoral vote. That's right. You heard it here first. Mike Pence has betrayed the United States of America.
Wow. Wow.
And he has betrayed the people of the United States, and we will never, ever forget!
Yeah! It's real simple.
Yeah? What's simple?
Pence betrayed us.
Who? Pence did, huh? Okay.
Which apparently everybody knew he was going to.
Oh, my God.
And the president mentioned it like five times when he talked. You can go back and watch the press video.
This is our Capitol. Just be respectful to him. There's 4 million people coming in, so there's a lot of control. We love you guys. We love the cops.
It's only a matter of time. Justice is coming.
Oh, my God. That video they show, right? That juxtaposition is startling because you hear Trump putting all the blame on Pence. The people in the crowd reacting to exactly what Trump said about Pence. And then you see them in the Capitol. And there's a threat on the screen right here. Somebody wrote this on the paper that Mike Pence was using on the dais of the U.S. Senate chamber where Mr. QAnon Shaman was standing behind the desk there. And what he wrote on Mike Pence's paper is, it's only a matter of time. Justice is coming. Can you imagine? Just imagine the cries, the screams, the accusations that would be spewing forth from the Fox Not News channel if this was a group of Democrats who had dared to breach the Capitol and do the crap they did. They wouldn't, but just, opposite world. So we are by now, we're just so you know, a couple of clips ago, we entered the afternoon, the second session. So we're getting close to the end. This clip, so we've heard a lot in the last few days about the Proud Boys, right? The Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Well, in the Proud Boys court filing, listen to this. The Proud Boys, and apparently Tamara said in the chat room that one of them turned over their actual game plan. I think the 1776, whatever it is, they had it in writing. They had it all detailed what they were going to do. And this went off right according to plan. But this in this clip, you're going to hear what the Proud Boys said they would have done if they did get Mike Pence or Nancy Pelosi or AOC. Oh, my God.
Make no mistake about the fact that the vice president's life was in danger. A recent court filing by the Department of Justice explains that a confidential informant from the Proud Boys told the FBI that the Proud Boys would have killed Mike Pence if given a chance. This witness, whom the FBI affidavit refers to as W1, stated that other members of the group talked about things they did that day, and they said that anyone they got their hands on, they would have killed, including Nancy Pelosi. W1 further stated that members of the Proud Boys said that they would have killed Mike Pence if given a chance.
Sure.
We understand that congressional leaders and others were evacuated from the Capitol complex during the attack. We'd like to show you what happened after the vice president was evacuated from the Senate.
Yeah, please do. Here we go.
Select Committee has obtained never-before-seen photos from the National Archives that show Vice President Pence sheltering in a secure underground location as rioters overwhelmed the Capitol. At 4:19 p.m., Vice President Pence is seen looking at a tweet the president had just sent, a tweet asking the rioters to leave the Capitol. After 4.5 hours spent on working to restore order, the vice president returned to the Senate floor to continue the certification of electors.
Wow. So this Proud Boys whistleblower, yes, said we would have killed them all. And do you have any doubt when you heard the video of those people walking through the Capitol building that they would have? All right, I'm going to rush because I've only got a few left here. Jacob here talks about an email that he sent to John Eastman.
Immediately before you and the vice president were evacuated to a secure location within the Capitol, you hit send on an email to John Eastman explaining why his legal theory about the vice president's role was wrong. You ended your email by stating that, quote, thanks to your bullshit, we are now under siege.
Thanks to your bullshit, we're now under siege.
Take a look at that email.
Listen to this. So this is what the lawyer sent to Eastman, to John Eastman.
Dr. Eastman replied, and this is hard to believe, but his reply back to you was,
yeah?
The siege is because you and your boss, presumably referring to the vice president of the United States, did not do what was necessary to allow this to be aired in a public way so the American people can see for themselves what happened.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Jacob, later that day, you wrote again to Dr. Eastman. Let's show that email on the screen.
Okay.
In that email, you wrote, and I quote, did you advise the president that in your professional judgment, the vice president does not have the power to decide things unilaterally?
Yeah.
And you ended that email saying, it does not appear that the president ever got the memo.
Oy.
Yeah. Dr. Eastman then replied, he's been so advised. And he ends his email with, quote, but you know him, once he gets something in his head, It's hard to get him to change course. Close
yeah,
quote.
We know him, unfortunately.
Mr. Jacob, when Dr. Eastman wrote, once he gets something in his head, it's hard to get him to change course, did you understand the he in that email to refer to the President of the United States?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Let's keep going along this line of questioning.
Mr. Hirschman's account of that call.
So this is the other lawyer's
the
account of that
after,
call, right?
Eastman, I don't remember why he called me, and he texted me or called me, wanted to talk with me, and he said he couldn't reach others.
John Eastman's running scared at this point.
He asked me about something dealing with Georgia and preserving something potentially for appeal. And I said to him, are you out of your effing mind? Right.
Wait, I want you to hear what...
Could I only want to hear two words coming out of your mouth for now on. Orderly transition.
But wait till you hear what Eastman said back to him.
Eastman said, I don't want to hear any other effing words coming out of your mouth, no matter what, other than orderly transition. Repeat those words to me.
Yeah.
And
orderly
I
feel transition. Excited.
Eventually he said, orderly transition.
And then what?
I said, good, John. Now I'm going to give you the best free legal advice you're ever getting in your life. Get a great effing criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it.
Yeah. Get a great criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it. But wait, there's more.
In fact, just a few days later, Dr. Eastman emailed Rudy Giuliani and requested that he be included on a list of potential recipients of a presidential pardon.
Pardon! He wants a pardon!
Dr. Eastman's email stated, quote, I've decided that I should be on the pardon list, if that is still in the works.
I've decided that I should be
on the pardon list. Dr. Eastman did not receive his presidential pardon.
No, he didn't receive his presidential pardon. He decided he should be on the presidential pardon list if that was still in the works, but it wasn't. So, well, let's pick up right there because it just gets better. So what happens when you don't get your pardon, John Eastman? You plead the fifth.
His presidential pardon. So let's see what Dr. Eastman did.
Yeah, let's.
As a result,
yeah?
When he was deposed by this committee.
Yeah, let's see.
If I assert my Fifth Amendment right against being compelled to be a witness against myself.
That's him, the guy with the name tag on.
Ask you to prepare a memorandum regarding the vice president's role in the counting of electoral votes at the joint session of Congress on January 6, 2025. Dr. Eastman, did you advise the President of the United States that the Vice President could reject electors from seven states and declare that the President had been reelected? Fifth. Dr. Eastman, the first sentence
he keeps
of
saying
the memo,
fifth. That's all he says is fifth. He doesn't even say, I assert my Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate myself. He just says
is that
fifth.
That statement in this memo true?
He'll say fifth.
Fifth.
Fifth. Fifth?
President Trump.
Oh, shut up. Okay, so that's that. He just says
finally,
the fifth.
Let's hear from a federal court judge, the only one to date who has opined on whether the president was involved in criminal activity.
Yeah.
Page 36, mm-hmm. Judge Carter's ruling says, quote,
listen.
Based on the evidence, the court finds it more likely than not that President Trump corruptly attempted to obstruct the joint session of Congress on January 6, 2021.
Boom.
Page 40 of the ruling says, quote, based on the evidence, the court finds that it is more likely than not that President Trump and Dr. Eastman dishonestly conspired to obstruct the joint session of Congress on January 6th, 2021.
Yes, they did.
And page 44, Dr. Eastman and President Trump launched a campaign to overturn a Democratic election, an action unprecedented in American history. Their campaign was not confined to the ivory tower. It was a coup in search of a legal theory.
It was a coup in search of a legal theory. So I'm going to end with one final clip. And this is Judge Luttig's closing statement.
I have written, as you said, Chairman Thompson, that today, almost 2 years after that fateful day in January 2021, that still Donald Trump and his allies and supporters. Are a clear and present danger to American democracy.
Donald Trump and his supporters are a clear and present danger to our democracy. Case closed. I mean, that's one of theirs. He is their guy. He is their most notable conservative right-wing attorney. And again, I direct you to go to the website, NicoleSandler.com/6-16-22. Give me about an hour to get it all posted, but I'm going to post his entire 12-page statement. And he minces no words. Our democracy today is on a knife's edge. And they were ready to just stick the knife in the heart of what still works in this country. It's not about race. It's one of the few things that isn't about race. It's about Donald Trump and his desire to be a king and his belief that his shit doesn't stink and that he's better than you. And, well, not you, because if you're listening to the show, you're not giving him money. But these people who've been taken in by Don the Con have given him over $250 million since January 6th. People, wise up. And with that, we're done. Tomorrow, we'll finish going through this, and then we're going to end the week with a giant spleef. I'm not kidding. No, tomorrow, we've got a couple of authors on who have a book called Can Legal Weed Win? Because by this time tomorrow, I don't know about you, but I'm going to need that giant spleef. And preferably the legal sort. But what they're saying is, it's too expensive. The illegal stuff is still easier to get and cheaper. Because it's the American way. All right, everyone. The next hearing, by the way, is coming up on Tuesday. There are two set for next week, Tuesday and Thursday, both at 1 p.m. Eastern. So I'm going to run into the same problems where they're going to go right until about an hour before the show ends, and it is what it is. We'll cover it because, you know, that's what we do. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I will leave you with the news because I did do a What's News today, as usual. And I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is Friday. Boy, do I ever need a weekend. All right. And don't forget, if you're still looking for a Father's Day gift, talk to me. Or if you need a pet portrait done, talk to me. There's one in progress. It's not quite done yet. But that would be Copper, the doggy, and Kitty Ella. Work in progress. All right. Have a great night, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. And we'll wrap this week up. But now, here's the news.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Breaking news overnight, the Washington Post reporting that Ginny Thomas, the wife of a sitting Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, was even more closely involved with the January 6th plotting than previously believed. This information gleaned from her email correspondence with Donald Trump lawyer John Eastman. Washington Post reporting, the committee's members and staffers are now discussing whether to spend time during their public hearings exploring Ginny Thomas's role in the attempt to overturn the outcome of the 2020 election. So there's that. Separately, the House January 6th Select Committee released footage of the Capitol tour led by Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia on January 5th, showing the tourists taking pictures at the Capitol and making menacing comments about members of Congress. All this despite Loudermilk's protests repeatedly that he gave no such tour. So the House Select Committee is back in session today with its third hearing, making the case that then President Trump's pressure campaign on his vice president to overturn the election directly contributed to the violence on January 6, 2021. According to aides, the hearing will also reveal new materials about then-Vice President Mike Pence's movements on January 6th, including his whereabouts and what he was doing when the rioters breached the Capitol. So most of today devoted to unpacking this line from Liz Cheney's opening statement last Thursday.
You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it.
One of the lasting impressions the committee hopes to leave, Donald Trump knowingly almost got Mike Pence killed. Full coverage of today's testimony coming on my show today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific, on Progressive Voices or at NicoleSandler.com. In other news, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 0.75 point on Wednesday in an aggressive move to tackle inflation. It's the biggest increase in 28 years and will affect millions of American businesses and households by pushing up the cost of borrowing for homes, cars, and other loans. The reason for the hike? To get inflation under control while keeping the job market recovery intact. But experts say that the war in Ukraine, supply chain issues, and COVID-19 are all impacting progress. The Justice Department on Wednesday said it's filing 26 counts of federal hate crime charges against Peyton Gendron. That's the monster accused of killing 10 black people last month in a racially motivated attack at a Buffalo, New York supermarket. Attorney General Merrick Garland said after visiting the site of the massacre and meeting with relatives of the victim, quote, no one in this country should have to live in fear that they'll go to work or shop at a grocery store and will be attacked by someone who hates them because of the color of their skin. The DOJ said that the shooter's motive was, quote, to prevent black people from replacing white people and eliminating the white race. If convicted, he could face the death penalty. In a somewhat related story, John Hinckley Jr., that's the man who attempted to assassinate former President Ronald Reagan back in 1981, he was freed on Wednesday from court oversight. Freed. Tried to assassinate a president. Okay. President Biden on Wednesday signed an executive order seeking to strengthen protections for LGBTQ people in celebration of Pride Month. A recent poll by the Trevor Project, which provides crisis and suicide prevention services to LGBTQ youth, found that more than two-thirds of LGBTQ young people said that their mental health had been negatively affected by recent efforts in conservative states to enact laws restricting health care and other rights of transgender people. Biden's order seeks to shield them from discredited and dangerous anti-gay conversion therapy, which is banned in 20 states and Washington, D.C. The order also calls for providing more suicide prevention resources and to establish programs to respond to the LGBTQ mental health crisis. From the ever-growing COVID isn't over yet file, Dr. Anthony Fauci has now tested positive for COVID-19 and is experiencing mild symptoms and is receiving treatment. This news comes as FDA advisors recommended use of Moderna and Pfizer vaccines for children under 5. That's the last group in the U.S. without access to a vaccine at this point for the coronavirus. The FDA is expected to follow the recommendations, and if the CDC agrees at a meeting set for tomorrow and Saturday, the shots will be available by next week everywhere in the country, except where I am in Florida. Why? The Florida Department of Health issued a statement Wednesday saying that it did not place an order with the federal government for vaccine doses for kids 5 and under, in part because it doesn't advise that all kids get vaccinated. What? The deadline for placing a pre-order was Tuesday. The other 49 states all met that deadline. Florida stands alone. Why does Ron DeSantis want to kill our children? Just asking. And finally, a Florida synagogue filed a lawsuit arguing that a new state law put in place by that governor, DeSantis, prohibiting most abortion after 15 weeks, violates Jews' religious freedom and the state's constitution. Congregation Laur Vador of Boynton Beach says that the law, scheduled to take effect July 1st, clashes with Jewish teachings that abortion, quote, is required if necessary to protect the health, mental, or physical well-being of the woman, among other reasons, and therefore, quote, prohibits Jewish women from practicing their faith free of government intrusion and imposes the laws of other religions upon Jews. The Florida governor's office said it's confident that this law will ultimately withstand all legal challenges. Ugh. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.